One of the things my grandma and my grandfather both agree on is that my grandfather was very consumed by his job.
So as I rose with the company, I became a corporate junkie, just like other people get on drugs and they can't get off. Well, in this situation, going from the projects to an office on 345 Park Avenue, that was quite a whirlwind.
But he was ambitious and wanted whatever Bristol-Myers said. He said, I'm a company man. Well, so if Bristol-Myers says, jump, how high? That was the way he was about everything about Bristol-Myers.
According to my grandfather, he became more reckless in his decision-making, willingly sacrificing his marriage and his family for his work. It got to the point where after building a home in Durham, Connecticut, a home my grandma and her children loved, my grandfather threw it away without even talking to my grandma first.
So we had just built a new home in Durham, Connecticut, and which is out in a country setting, and a real nice area. And when management came to me and said, well, Randolph, we're having problems in Michigan, and we'd like to send you there to, and this was in the fourth quarter. I said, sure, no problem. And I didn't discuss that with my wife. I didn't discuss that with the children. I just let them know that we were moving and moving to Michigan.
Before the move, my grandfather was never around the house.
You know, he always had to go to the post office to mail stuff as a salesman. But he was always having somewhere to go and always had to go somewhere to wash his car. He had regular things that would keep him away from home. I didn't think anything about it, ever. He always had a life away from us in more ways. Lots of secrets between us, even though he told me as much as I thought I needed to know. But I learned later there were lots of secrets.
And so, you know, off I'd go to Michigan and with my focus on making those numbers, not anything else, just making the numbers. Now, my wife, most of the time, never knew where I was. And as far as I was concerned, as long as I'm delivering the funds, and you can do whatever you want, what's the problem?
This lack of communication persisted as the non-desired transition to Michigan became ever more real to everyone in the family, and the fractures started to set in and become more revealing.
I didn't want to leave Connecticut. I really didn't. But because of his strong personality and persuasion, he made me think that I wanted what he wanted. But I did not want to leave Connecticut. I wanted to stay right there where we built that house and raise our kids there in Connecticut. That's what I wanted.
After the move to Michigan, the tensions became worse, and my grandma sought out answers. It should be noted that this part of my grandparents' breakup story was only in one of the interviews I got.
When we moved to Michigan, we were having a hard time trying to make things work. And I prayed and I said, Lord, help me understand this. Why won't our relationship work? And we had lots of differences about arguments about this, that, and the other. Most married people have. We had arguments about it. But I asked for knowledge of what was wrong. I got a dream, and the dream was about this hidden life underground, where in the dream I went through the manhole, went down under the underground, and I saw these two people in this life, and they were sitting in a place where they had this big picture window, and they saw me coming, and they were laughing at me. I began to think, okay, the Lord's trying to tell me that there is something hidden that I don't know about. So the next time your grandfather went to sleep, I began to get nosy. And I went in his wallet and I saw an up-to-date picture of the person who was in his life before. I saw a little card that had, you know, things that match things she liked, her birthday, their anniversary, their, you know, things about her. And then I'm thinking, what is this? What is this? Saw that in the wallet, the up-to-date picture. Then next time I had a chance, I start nosing around his office, and I looked in his Alpha scrapbook. I looked in his college yearbook, his high school yearbook. And then finally I got into his attaché case where he kept all the time. And it had all of this evidence of very active, something's going on kind of thing. I found letters and photographs and everything that confirmed to me that he was not fully committed to me in this relationship. And it was, I didn't know how to take it. I didn't know what to do with it once I found out. But I got the answer that this was going on. And the thing that puzzled me was the letter saying, "Dear husband," saying to myself, "Well, that's not your husband, this is my husband." But at the same time, that's the way she addressed him, which made me think that at some point, that's what they wanted, was marriage. I kept it all to myself for a while until it was kind of eating at me and trying to figure out what was what. And I finally got up the nerve to bring up the conversation. And I didn't really want to admit that I had snooped to find out, but I wasn't looking for any problem, so I never thought that there was a problem, because he had it. It was well hidden. And everything that he did, he never did it in a way that I would know. Like, he would talk to her on the phone while I was at church. Because one time I didn't go to church, and I happened to have been sitting over the vent over where his desk was, and I heard the whole conversation. That's how I found out that they were talking while I was at church, because I didn't go to church that week. But anyway, this whole other life just opened up. And when we did have a conversation, then I found out that he more or less had bitten me off anyway, because we were not getting along at all. Not well at all. And he told me that he had somebody in his life who would go through hell or high water. And I wasn't making that. And yet, ironically, when he was courting me, he called me Precious. Never called me Wilhelmina. I was always Precious. But then Precious wasn't Precious anymore. And Wilhelmina became the thing that he would say to me if he wanted to speak to me.
This confrontation would ultimately lead to their divorce.
Because I'll always remember that the 14th of February is not Valentine's Day. That's my day that I was divorced. When we had our marriage, we were divorced. And because of being Catholic, we had a process also of doing what they called an annulment. Because the Catholic Church, if you're going to have a marriage dissolution, you have to have a review of whether you really should be unmarried. Well, he and I both applied for the annulment, and they told us under no circumstances we should have ever married, based upon what we both said in the review. We never should have married. Because we married each other for the wrong reasons. I married him to get away from Martinsville and to find a life for myself away from Martinsville. Because as I told you, as I thought, and I remember thinking that New Haven, Connecticut was a long way from Martinsville. But I wasn't really attracted to him. I was just in the head looking at him and just sort of accepting him for who he seemed to be. But I didn't know that he was such an exaggerator. And in some ways, somebody could say he was a liar, but he was an exaggerator over things that he wanted to. But I also realized that we just didn't love each other enough We didn't care about each other enough and the family to have kept the family together. And he was about his life and I was about my life.
And so that was pretty much where that, but it wasn't, it was an amicable breakup. As a matter of fact, since I was the one that caused all the problems, and I had no excuse whatsoever, when your grandmother got an attorney, I didn't feel the need to have an attorney, so because there wasn't anything I could defend, and so I used her attorney. So so I paid two-thirds of the attorney, and your grandmother paid the other third. And the other third. And
there's this notion that we should celebrate and look up to our elders. But should we really, if we know they aren't the superheroes we think they are? Specifically, if they haven't been around to demonstrate life for you by choice? Or have omitted details when you're asking for whole truths? I really wanted to tell this story. As a matter of fact, I struggled as to how best to frame this narrative for quite some time. I realized with a lot of help that I really needed to just tell the story from the perspective that I had heard it. I interviewed my grandparents' three children for this and realized that their voices gave weight to the truth, but I also felt that the story would become even more saturated with the extra voices, no matter how right they were. One of these stories is someone I have known since birth, filled with details, many of which I've left out because there are so many. One of these stories is of someone you literally just heard my first phone call with. Choosing who to believe will always lie with who has the greatest relationship. But at the end of the day, I really just want a relationship with my grandfather. I know that I'm going to have to proceed with the same level of caution everyone else who is on this side of his life has had to proceed with up to this point. This story is brought to you by Michael A. Betts II for John Bewin's class at the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University. Production and engineering by Music Juice Studios. Music by Lobo Loco and Blue Dot Sessions. Special thanks to my family, my wife Carmen Betts, and my friend Cassie Klaus for your brilliant interviews and guidance. Copyright 2018 by Michael A. Betts II.